Hello, and welcome to Ask the Mayor here on WBAA News. I'm your host, Emily Seiberg. This week, we're talking with Crawfordsville Mayor Todd Barton. Thanks so much for being with us. Remember, as always, you can email questions for all four of our mayors to ask@wbaa.org. Good afternoon, Mayor Barton.
Good afternoon.
So I want to start us off with this. I saw the Crawfordsville Street Department's notice to citizens about the appropriate procedures for fall leaf pickup. So I wanted to give you an opportunity here to remind everyone of what they need to do as they embark on their yard work for the weekend.
Well, the key thing is just get those leaves out to the curb and don't put anything else in there. That's the biggest problem we have is people sometimes will throw sticks and things like that. And, you know, the crews don't see that until they're vacuuming those leaves up and it can cause damage to the equipment. So, you know, just get it out to the curb. And the other thing is just be patient. Sometimes, you know, when you get them to the curb and you're afraid they're going to blow away, you hope somebody comes rather soon or rather quickly and picks those up. And, you know, they have a schedule they follow. And we tell everyone, you know, each year, we will get your leaves. You know, it's just a matter of the timing and the routes that they take to do that.
Okay. I also wanted to ask, it looks like there was a significant fire in Crawfordsville this week at an auto dealership. Was that a gas leak or was that determined? What happened there?
As of the latest that I know, the cause is still undetermined. And I know that's under investigation. Folks from the State Fire Marshal's office were here yesterday, along with our own investigators. And I know they were looking at that, but I've not heard of an official determination right now. But I know there was a gas leak involved, at least with the fire itself. So whether or not that's the cause, I don't know. But they did have to deal with some gas-related issues in that fire.
Okay. How did that impact the surrounding area, the surrounding neighborhood?
Well, it's in an area that's not heavily populated, so it really didn't cause, you know, too much of an impact. There were some evacuations in place. UPS has a facility right across the street, so that was impacted. I know that was evacuated for a while, and then just rerouting traffic out of that area, which probably caused the biggest concern for most people.
Okay. So Governor Eric Holcomb's weekly COVID-19 press briefing was yesterday, and a couple of things emerged from that briefing. First, the state is staying in stage 5, and we've seen a significant surge in cases since Indiana moved to stage 5. He's kind of essentially saying now personal responsibility is the key factor and not necessarily a return to putting restrictions in place. And it is absolutely true that personal responsibility is central to keeping COVID from spreading. But he also said last week there are plenty of people who aren't practicing that. And we've talked before about some of your frustrations with how COVID policies have been communicated by the state. So over the past week or so, what is the takeaway here for people? You know, what should we be concentrating on, you know, as the best way to get through this?
You know, that's tough. As far as the takeaway, I at least for me, I think it's more confusion on the part of the public. And I don't think things are being communicated very well. You know, we're just telling people to continue to do what you've been doing, to practice that social distancing, to take all those steps, you know, and try to limit your exposure as much as possible. I mean, you have to go on and live your life, obviously, but, you know, we're in an interesting time as the weather changes and people are inside more. And obviously people let their guard down. I mean, there's a clearly amount of fatigue involved in this, right? And so people let their guard down. And, you know, we had a briefing this morning and Dr. Douglas, the health officer, was laying out that where they're really seeing the spread right now is not in schools or anything like that. Where they're seeing the spread is in these gatherings where people get together for dinner or for some kind of a birthday party or something like that. We did have a fundraising event in which there were several positives that appear to be transmitted in that event. So, you know, just don't let your guard down. I think that's the key. And we're all going to have to rethink the holidays this year. Thanksgiving, Christmas, we may have to rethink how we do some of that.
And I know that right now, you recently had what looked like several days in a row with zero cases in the county, and then a bit of an uptick. And statewide, right, certainly seems like that's going to continue. I was just looking at today's statewide numbers between October 17th and October 21st, 2,880 cases were reported today. So that's a significant number.
Right.
And like you said, it is getting colder. We are asking people to really shift their paradigm, I think, especially about the holidays. That's really tough to ask people to do.
It is.
And something as simple as, you know, we've been talking about this week here in the greater Lafayette area. We've got a big Purdue football game this weekend. There won't be fans in the stands, but people are certainly going to be getting together for that. How do you do that safely? You know, how do you stay mindful? You know, as you were saying, these kind of smaller gatherings, and even the governor spoke to that last week. You know, he was saying, I believe, you know, it's not necessarily that people are going to a Colts game and getting COVID. You know, maybe they're going to a wedding. They're going to a wedding reception, something like that.
And I think that's part of what is really difficult for people to understand, because, you know, they will see that you shouldn't get together with, you know, five other family members, but then we're allowing thousands of people to go to a Colts game. And that just doesn't compute for most people. So, but I think that's where the fatigue is really starting to set in. They feel like they're getting mixed signals, and they feel like that, you know, those lines are being drawn in ways that don't make sense to them sometimes. And that's the challenge that I think public health and I think the state of Indiana has to address. And I'm not sure they're really addressing that adequately.
So something else the governor talked about yesterday, the state is going to start providing really targeted assistance to long-term care facilities where there have been a significant number of cases and deaths in Indiana. I know that's something Montgomery County grappled with for a while. I mean, what do you think was learned? What would you say, if we're talking about takeaways, what seemed to work to kind of stem the tide there?
It really was a matter of getting in there and testing everybody, you know, and I think maybe there was a lag in getting the staff tested. I think that probably contributed to some of the issues that we saw, but you've got to get in there and get everybody tested early and just separate this out and deal with it that way, because it spreads very rapidly in those types of facilities. And depending on the type of facility, can be very devastating. You know, if you have people with chronic underlying conditions and then you introduce this, that has a devastating effect. Where we had another facility, which is more of a memory care facility, and people don't have as many underlying physical problems, we fared much better in that situation. So testing, you know, in those facilities is the key, but, you know, you have to remember that they've restricted families and they've restricted visitors and things like that, but you still have employees, you still have staff coming and going every day.
Out in the world. Yeah.
They're out in the world, and then they have to come to work. And so you have that cross, you know, contamination potential every single day.
So we've certainly talked over the past months about canceling events and, you know, kind of how far out in advance decisions have to be made about whether or not something can realistically happen, and that can be difficult. You know, it's October. Halloween has been a topic. We talked about that last month. But as you were saying, there are other holidays, other holiday traditions are ahead. You know, the Christmas parade in Lafayette has been canceled.
Right.
Last week on this show, Mayor of Frankfort, Judy Sheet, said the Christmas parade there was, I believe, still under discussion. And it looks like Crawfordsville also has a Christmas parade. Is that going forward? You know, what do you know about that?
No, the parade in Crawfordsville has been canceled for this year.
Okay.
The Chamber of Commerce sponsors that and puts that on every year, and they've already made the decision to not have the parade. And that decision was largely driven by the fact that if you look at what happens at the parade, it's people. I mean, they're congregate all along the street. I mean, they're tightly compacted, pretty much that entire parade route. And that was just a situation they didn't want to create. So despite the fact that it's outside, there was just a real concern about pulling people together, you know, tightly like that for a parade. So it is not going to happen this year.
You know, you told me there was a lot of, you know, discussion about Halloween this year just amongst local officials on how to handle it, and that you were getting a lot of questions about it. And you and I might not normally be talking about Halloween on this show or trick-or-treating. We might not normally be discussing the annual Christmas parade. But
right.
These events have a lot of meaning for people.
They do.
I mean, I guess,
they have a lot of meaning. Yeah, there's no doubt about that.
So I guess, what are you hearing from people? Are people accepting that this is just kind of the way that it has to be right now, and that these are things we can return to in the future? at some as yet unspecified point in time? Or is there some real disappointment? You know, what are the conversations you're having with people about this?
I mean, I think the Halloween trick-or-treat decision seems to have been fairly well received, because we, at the end of the day, said, you know, it's personal responsibility. So, you know, if you're comfortable in participating, these are the hours in which you can do that in the city of Crawfordsville. If you're not, then don't, by all means, don't participate. So that decision's gone very well. I've not heard much about the parade, and I don't think that has really been widely publicized yet. So I don't think people are really in tune to the fact that that's not happening yet. That'll probably be a bigger topic, you know, in a few more weeks when people figure out that it's not happening.
Okay.
A bigger issue too is, you know, we have downtown party night.
Downtown party night? Okay.
Yeah, you know, I mean, all the stores are open in the evening, and people just pack the downtown, and we have the lighting of the Christmas tree at the courthouse. People, you know, file into all the shops, and our Main Street program is looking at that right now and what kind of changes they're going to make. There will be something this year. It will look vastly different than what we normally do, because if you look at that in a traditional year, people, like I said, they're just packed into these stores, and we don't want to create that situation. So I'm confident they're coming up with an alternative plan, because we also have to remember that that's a big deal for those businesses, and those businesses, some of them had really rough years. So,
right.
You know, we don't want to discourage people from shopping downtown. We just have to think about how we kind of spread that out and make it safer for everyone involved.
Around when does that typically happen, that downtown evening?
Well, it's typically, you know, right around that first week of December, that first weekend, right after Thanksgiving, you know, so depending on how the calendar falls each year, but you know, you always have the shop, you know, you have a Black Friday, then you have shop small Saturday, and it's typically that Saturday, Friday, Saturday, right in there. So,
well, and again, you're describing what is a constant conversation, in which the governor has also mentioned kind of these tough choices between the financial health and the physical health, and trying to land on the thing that makes the most sense for everyone. And like you said, if these small businesses they've obviously been having a tough year.
Yes.
You know, how can we still help them succeed? You know, I think that, but again, at the end of the day, you know, tough decisions that everybody has to make.
Yeah. And I think at this point, I mean, people understand that, and they understand that process, you know, but you can't lose sight of the fact that they've had such an incredibly tough year, and that event probably, I'm sure, is their biggest, you know, day of the year as far as sales. So we have to find another way to do it, and we will. There's no doubt.
You are listening to Ask the Mayor here on WBAA News. I'm your host, Emily Seiberg. Right now we're talking with Crawfordsville Mayor Todd Barton. And real quickly, we've discussed Wabash College and how they fit into the Crawfordsville community. So what's an update there? How have their COVID numbers been as the school year has continued on into the fall?
So we had a report this morning in our briefing from Dr. Roberts, a college physician, you know, and they've done really well this year. They have 4 weeks left in the semester. They're very focused. I can tell you they've been far more disciplined than anybody that I've seen throughout this process. And so they've really tried to keep the students on campus as much as possible. They've taken every step possible on campus. And they also are doing random testing. So they test a certain percentage of the student population every week.
Mm-hmm.
Went several weeks in a row with that being negative, not a single positive. This last week, they did have some positives, but they've been very aggressive with their contact tracing on campus. Those students who live within a reasonable distance have gone home. The others are isolated off on campus. And they just try to get ahead of this everywhere they see it start to pop up. So they've done very well. Their goal is to make it through the semester without having to shift entirely virtual.
Okay.
And we're seeing some colleges make that shift. So, mm-hmm. They're trying to not let that happen here. And like I said, they've been far more disciplined with this than most. So I think they're gonna. It looks like they're gonna make it, but you know, things can change drastically in a few days. So,
why do you think they've been more disciplined? Where do you think that comes from?
You know, I think being a smaller campus and a tighter knit community, and I think the messaging there has been pretty strong from you know, the administration and the faculty and everybody. I mean, it's just, if you're a student, you know what's expected of you, and you know you have to toe that line, because they're painfully aware of the fact that if this starts to crop up, it starts to become an issue, you're all going home, and this is not going to happen. So it's just a different environment there, and they have been very focused.
Can you talk a little bit, to the extent that you can, about, I guess, the general progress of K through 12 schools then in Crawfordsville when it comes to COVID?
Well, this week, all of our schools are on fall break. So, you know, we've done really well. They've been back to full day. Everybody's back, full day instruction in the classroom. And I don't interact with them on a daily basis, but the reports that we've received from the superintendents indicate that the things are going very, very well. When there are positive cases, those are traced and everybody around them is quarantined, and there just does not appear to be any transmission within our schools. So they've done well, and that will be interesting, you know, again, as the weather changes and with everybody on fall break. So, you know, there's no doubt there are a lot of students and families traveling this week all over the country. So
and
what
so
would that mean?
Well, right. And I was saying this to someone this morning, I feel like this discussion around fall break has perhaps slipped past us a bit. We think about spring break, we think about the holidays. We don't think as much about this little chunk of time, but
yeah.
I've heard about a lot of people traveling.
Fall break has changed.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, years ago, it was Thursday and Friday.
Mm-hmm.
And so people really, you know, they didn't really do much. They, you know, maybe done something, you know, close to home, but it's an entire week now. So it kind of resembles spring break in that people take off and go on vacations and go places. And there's quite a bit of that right now. So we'll have to see what that means, you know, when everybody returns,
mm-hmm.
and then goes back into the classroom, and, you know, will there be an impact from that? We don't know, but it's certainly possible. And, you know, in this community, we have a large, very large motocross event this weekend.
Okay.
So it's the GNCC version of the Ironman.
Uh-huh.
So different version than what we have in August. And there will be thousands of visitors coming from all over the country this weekend. The thing about it is they're pretty self-contained. So there's, you know, they tend to come, stay there, camp there, do everything there. So interaction with the greater community is not as much as it would be in some events. So we'll just have to see what happens from that.
Okay. And actually, speaking of this weekend, and I don't know if this is still happening, I was looking at this discussion in a Montgomery County Facebook group. People were talking about a Trump train this weekend. So essentially a convoy of vehicles driving around in support of the president. There can be, you know, hundreds of cars sometimes in these convoys. And what people were talking about, the last I saw, one was scheduled to pass through Crawfordsville this weekend, I believe on Saturday. And again, that's the last I saw, which was during this week. So what I was thinking about and reading about, and this is a very specific point to ask you about in relation to this, but someone raised the point that people have witnessed this creating traffic issues in their areas. I guess,
yeah.
Have you heard about this particular Trump train? And
right.
Then does the city have to do anything to prepare for what could be this a huge line of vehicles possibly coming through town?
So we've seen some chatter about that, that's a possibility. And there was actually a possibility of something last weekend. And if it happened, and it may have, it didn't really produce any kind of impact. We didn't know about it. So we are seeing chatter about something coming up. And, you know, for us, it's just keeping an awareness for our officers to know that if there's a possibility this is happening, and if there is a traffic problem, they'll have to deal with it at the time. But we've had no, as far as I know, no formal contact from any organization sponsoring this, wanting any kind of traffic assistance or anything like that.
Okay. So Election Day is coming right up. It's hard
Not
to
soon
believe.
Enough.
I feel like everyone's kind of looking ahead. There's lots of early voting happening right now in Indiana and nationwide. What does that look like in Montgomery County? How has that process been going?
I think it's gone very well. I don't have a report this week from the county clerk, but I know she was on our podcast a couple weeks ago, and early voting looks like it's going to break a record here, like a lot of places. It's been the first few days there were long lines, and since then people have kind of staggered their times. But I'm guessing the way it looks, we're going to have probably record turnout for this general election. But there haven't been any glitches or any problems. So, you know, everybody understands. And if there's a line, what tends to happen is people say, well, I'll come back in an hour, you know, and they do, and they get right in and vote. So a lot of interest, and I think it's going very well, as far as we can tell.
About how many early voting sites do you have available in Montgomery County?
Well, right now they're primarily just running the one large site at the fairgrounds, and that's different than other years. But you know, it's a site in which they could really spread people out and maintain distancing in the line and everything else. So they had to change their approach, but that'll start to change as we get closer to Election Day. But right now, I think the fairgrounds is the only site that's up and running.
Okay. This is something else I was seeing discussion about. I saw the Libertarian candidate for governor, Donald Rainwater, visited Montgomery County this week. And again, kind of following along with a lengthy discussion in this group about Rainwater's candidacy. He had a lot of fans. A lot of people were really interested in what he had to say. What have you been hearing from people about the governor's race?
Well, I here locally, we're hearing a lot of discussion about it that we probably wouldn't be hearing otherwise. And I think what's fueling that is strictly the COVID situation. And people feel very strongly one way or the other that, and we saw that in the gubernatorial debate, if you will, you know, one side saying you're not doing enough and the other side saying, look, you're going way too far. So
yeah, I think
he's kind of caught in the middle there. And,
yeah.
And that's fueling the discussion here. You know, it looks like to me that a lot of people are going to make their decision in that race based solely on the COVID response, which, you know, there's a lot more to that picture as far as how we finance government in Indiana and how we do the things we need to do. So a lot to think about there, but there is definitely more interest in that governor's race than there probably would have been had we not had the COVID situation.
And that seems like a little bit of a recent development. It certainly seemed kind of binary. We have the Republican incumbent, we have his Democratic challenger, and now all of a sudden, again, I am seeing, you know, not just in Montgomery County, but in other places, a lot of conversation about this person who kind of has that third viewpoint on what's happening.
Yeah. And it's interesting. It's not a third viewpoint that's, you know, kind of in between the other two. It's farther away from, you know, it's definitely far away from the Democratic candidate and a little bit farther away from the Republican candidate. So it's a very interesting dynamic for sure.
I know I saw some residents this morning talking about a stopped train on Market Street. I wanted to ask you about this. I know there was back and forth a few months ago over rail crossing work interfering with city street work. There was a possible, you know, lawsuit in the mix. Yeah. I guess, what's the update? What is the latest with the train situation, the street work? You know, where has everything ended up?
So it's actually gone very well with the exception of this morning, which this morning wasn't too bad.
But, okay.
They did end up closing the crossing after we had Wabash Avenue open, which was fine. We were able to adapt to that point and everything was fine. That was closed for a little less than a week. They replaced that crossing for US 136 and everything went exceedingly well in that process. So we're just thankful that they waited until we had Wabash Avenue open, because had they done it before then, it would have been a disaster. So that is done. The issue with stop trains on that crossing is very cyclical.
So I was going to ask that. I mean, I know that we talk about this cyclically, I suppose, you know, it doesn't seem like a topic that ever completely recedes. It feels like just kind of in the mix all the time.
Yeah. And it goes away. I mean, it'll get better for a couple of months and then it'll rear its head again. This morning was kind of an anomaly. It was not the normal type situation. And I've done a little bit of research today to try to find out what happened.
What is the normal type situation? What typically is happening?
Well, there's two different scenarios. One is that they stopped to do switching. That's what was plaguing us for a while. We did get that change. So that particular train that was stopping to do switching and just sitting there, that's not happening anymore. So that's one reason. The other is just underpowering the trains coming through Crawford. So they have to climb up a grade and they don't have enough power to get through. That's what kind of is cyclical. And I it appears that that's what happened this morning. But they approached it differently this morning, and they addressed it a lot more quickly than they normally do, which is a very good sign. I've not had direct contact with anybody at CSX yet to really talk about what happened today, and I hope to do that before the day's over. But it was a short time this morning, under 2 hours, which for us is a short term blockage, because sometimes these last 6 hours or more.
I mean, 6 hours is a long time to have
it
a,
is a very
to have
long
a roadway blocked,
and people get very, very angry, believe me, when they're blocked for that long.
Well, so if someone is sitting in their car and they are blocked, what is their first phone call? You know,
right?
What do they? What can they reasonably do in that moment?
Yeah. Well, I think the best thing they can do is, you know, what most people have figured out is turn around and go around.
Well, yes, that's a very practical response.
But there's a bridge a few blocks away. Just go over there and go around. But calling CSX is really the most important thing that people can do when that happens. And I know everybody will say, well, you know, the mayor's dodging it here. He should be the one calling them. I do call them, but mm-hmm. I count as one call. They don't particularly care. You know, it doesn't carry more weight that the mayor's calling them of Crawfordsville, Indiana. Okay, so what? But if they're
really
getting, you know, dozens and hundreds of calls, that starts to add up and starts to get their attention. So by all means, calling them is really the most important thing people can do. Calling 911 or calling our emergency dispatch center is probably the worst thing you can do.
Do people do that?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And they're busy. You know, I mean, they're trying to sort out what's happening. They've got other things going on. And when people are calling them to say, hey, you know, there's a train across the crossing. Well, they have a camera. They're sitting there looking at it, and they have a lot going on. And they don't have the answers either. They don't know what's going on with that train any more than we do. So they can call the railroad and ask, but it, you know, the information they get is spotty at best.
I mean, I guess you're calling CSX.
Yes.
You're trapped. You know that you're going to turn around any minute now and go about your day and find another way to get where you're going. But I mean, is the expectation then that CSX will say, okay, we're going to pull out of here, we're going to get this train going? I mean, what happens?
Yeah,
you know, what does that do?
They're just going to provide you information, but I think, you know, the number of responses they get, certainly they pay attention to at some point. But the reality is that there is no law. There is nothing that says that they have to clear that crossing. That Indiana had a law, and it was struck down by the Indiana Supreme Court, and that's that, and the railroads know it. So we can ask, we can be nice, we can raise our voice, we can do anything we want, but at the end of it, they'll move when they're ready to move. That's all there is to it.
Okay. That is our time for today. Mayor Barton, thanks so much for being with
us,
as always. You can find this program at our website, wbaa.org, along with an archive of our shows with the mayors of Lafayette, West Lafayette, Crawfordsville, and Frankfort. Send us your questions for all four mayors to ask, that's ASK, at wbaa.org. Thanks so much for listening, and have a great rest of the day.
Businesses across Indiana have struggled to keep their doors open during the COVID-19 pandemic, but the